Look at your Facebook traffic and compare it to last year. Tablet traffic is on the rise. When we're media buying in these Advantage Plus campaigns, if your page is broken for that subset of your audience or doesn't perform as well because of a technical issue, Facebook just won't serve it to that audience because they think it's converting poorly. So you need to make sure that your page experience is good across the board. Because if it's not good, Facebook's going to assume that your audience is just bad and not performing for your product when really it's just a page issue. But all Facebook sees is this person isn't converting, so I'm not going to serve that traffic there. You could be missing out on a very, very large portion of your otherwise great converting audiences because your page isn't optimized properly for their devices and Facebook's just not serving to them.
If you haven't yet used Motion, the creative analytics platform used by top e-com and D2C brands like Fiori, True Classic, The Farmer's Dog, Hexclad, and hundreds more to ship winning ads, here's why you should try it out. Everyone knows that the right creative is the number one lever for success with paid ads. That's how you make money. But consistently shipping new winning creative? You're going to need your media buyers and your creative teams on the same page. Right now, you're probably spending hours tiring away going back and forth between Google Sheets and your ad platforms and tools, and then spending even more time plugging it all into different decks for the rest of your team. In a perfect world, you could have an elegant way to combine visual assets and performance data so media buyers can save time and creative teams can get the details they need to make great ads all in one place. And that's where Motion comes in. In seconds, you can build powerful visual reports using data from your ad accounts. You can monitor your performance metrics and see your visual assets in the same platform. No need to go back and forth across multiple apps. You'll finally have media buyers and creative teams working together to create and scale your next big winner. If you're ready to learn how the best D2C and e-commerce brands use Motion to ship winning Meta, TikTok, and YouTube ads, book a demo today or start a free trial at motionapp.com/DTC. Even better, Motion offers a monthly subscription plan so you can dodge those annoying annual contracts. Get 50% off your first month when you use the link motionapp.com/DTC on signup. It's all killer, no filler. I'm Eric, and I'm here on the D2C podcast with Mr. Brett Turner, making his triumphant return to the podcast. Brett, how have you been?
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. I have been very well. I've spent the last 6 months kind of shoulder deep in CRO on all different fronts. And no real agenda. I just kind of want to riff about what we're working on and what's been effective for us and just open the kimono. Because one thing I've realized is CRO is very slept on. And I think I don't even think it's an education barrier. I think people know they need to be working on it and they just need a constant reminder. So that's what I'm here for, because I'm very a big believer in it.
It is the season of CRO, I think, too. I think everyone's looking to make more from what they're currently doing. Everyone needs to because of the other eroding market factors, the rise in ad costs, all these different reasons why CRO is this hot button topic. When you positioned this podcast to me, you said CRO from the media buyer's perspective, which reminds me always, for some reason, of Otto in The Simpsons being like, you got anything written from the vampire's perspective? But in this case, as a media buyer, right, you're individual media buyers who are probably in a lot of cases writing the creative, building the ad asset, structuring the whole campaign, and in a lot of cases, like having control over the landing page or the checkout experience in a lot of cases. So how do you think about CRO from the perspective of a media buyer?
Yeah, love this. Getting right into it. So the reason I faced it like that from a media buyer's perspective. So for context, I spent the first 5 years of my online marketing career as a media buyer exclusively on Facebook, mostly social, and just scrapping away at hyper-optimizing campaigns. I was a very technical media buyer. And what I found when kind of jumping over into the CRO world is, once again, everybody knows they need to work on CRO, but building a strategy to test CRO, get statistically significant data. Do I test landing pages? Do I test PDPs? Do I optimize my button colors? Do I optimize my headlines? How do I know when to send traffic to collections? How do I know when to send traffic to PDP? It's all so overwhelming. And building a roadmap to do that for your given brand, it's almost impossible for a lot of people. So the way that I always like to face it, a lot of us have experienced media buying, solving those problems. We have a roadmap for when to test a campaign, when to test an audience, when to test a creative, when to iterate on creative, when to bring an audience in. So the way that I always suggest attacking your CRO is think of it just like a media buying campaign. So I always like to say your campaign is your high level funnel, is your very, very high level funnel. Where are you sending that traffic to? Is it going to a PDP, a collection page, a landing page? Where is the entry point of the traffic and why does that make sense? And you test that super broad level, like you'd test a campaign. So you figure out what echelon and what audience should go to what page. Once you've kind of locked that in and you have your working campaign, then you want to go optimize one step deeper. This is how I look at when you're looking at your ad sets. So when you're testing your ad sets, you're testing things like your audiences, you're targeting all of that. And how that translates to CRO is you're testing the pages and the experience within those funnels. So maybe you're testing a collection page. You're going to test different variants of those collection pages, different ways of displaying the products within those collections. And then once you lock those side of things in, that's when you get to the ad level, which is where as a media buyer, you're optimizing your creative, you're optimizing your headlines, you're optimizing your ad text. And that's when we get to what most people think about CRO as, which is split testing your buttons, split testing your colors, split testing your images, split testing your above the fold, the actual experience within each of those pages in the funnel. So to summarize, you're testing CRO, you're getting overwhelmed by it. Instead of thinking it as this big hodgepodge of so many different things to test, think of it just like your media campaigns. Crack your high-level funnel like you would a campaign. Crack the content and the pages and the experience within that funnel like you would an ad set. And then crack all of the actual nitty-gritty things on each of those pages and in the funnel like you would an ad. And then you could optimize within that. So each audience is going to have a different ad set experience, or each audience might experience a different kind of echelon of pages within the funnel. Each ad in each specific user, or maybe a specific geo or targeting segment or audience segment, they might respond differently to a different hero image on the page. And once you kind of lay out that rubric for yourself, it becomes a lot easier to actually build a plan and build a strategy.
How does this work with things like Advantage Plus or some of these, or PMax, for instance, on the Google side? You know, what you're laying out to me is very much like the media buyer's mentality, which is like control all the variables that you can, because you're going to be able to maybe do better than the machine. What are you finding with this advice when it comes to things like PMax or like Advantage Plus shopping campaigns?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So usually, I mean, when you're using PMax or Advantage Plus shopping campaigns, you're testing, like the variable being tested very heavily there is the media side of things, right? So usually once we lean really heavy into those, I like to already have a page that's vetted and tested, because you lose the ability to be more flexible on the page side of things. A lot of the times what we're doing in those cases is we're using dynamic variable insertion to pull what creative is specifically being clicked on and swapping content within that to better cater on the PDP or on the pages. So say you have a dynamic campaign, it's totally distributing things at its own will. Depending on what creative or ad set that's clicked on, you're passing through and piggybacking that UTM off and displaying, maybe you have an ad set that's targeting mothers and another one that's targeting first-time home buyers, making sure that the content on that page is respective of each of those angles. It is tricky when you get into that world of PMax and Advantage Plus, where you're kind of letting go of the controls on that front. But in those cases, I always like to make sure that I've gone through that page vetting process prior.
And let's talk about that page vetting process. Like, I like the way you laid that out from the perspective of a media buyer. And now, so say we get to that post-click experience, like what are you looking for to know that you should be running either a dynamic insertion campaign or a totally own landing page for any given campaign or ad set? How do you think about breaking that out?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's just realizing where your audience is in the funnel and just intuitively understanding your product and what people need to know. One of the biggest things that I see people doing far too often is treating CRO like it's this binary thing where there is just this thing that's going to work or it's not going to work. And again, when we go back to thinking as like a media buyer, imagine thinking of a creative in that way. That's just, it's going to work on my entire ad account or it's not going to work on my entire ad account. That's just ridiculous. You need to like very aggressively segment your CRO and think about it on usually the best place to start is on an audience level. So again, think of if you're dealing with somebody very top of funnel that may be very not literate in your product and you need to kind of, maybe it's an audience that requires a little bit more handholding to get to that point of understanding how it's a good fit for them. That's going to be a good fit for a longer form, more contentful landing page that's more catered to that audience. Whereas somebody that's a much more warm user, they're ready to rock, they understand your product, they're ready to convert, but maybe they're more price point sensitive. That's going to be somebody who might benefit from a bundling focused PDP or a exclusive discount of some sort and facing that on the page. So it's very important to think of the context of where the test is and where the traffic is being sent in, because that long form pre-sell that we just spoke about, if you send that to a super warm, ready to buy audience, all that pre-sell is doing is getting in their way from clicking that shop and buy button. They're having to scroll all the way down to the bottom to buy the product that they so desperately want. And if you treat it like binary, test a pre-sell across your entire ad account, see a result and just think, oh, that's it, you're going to fail. You need to make sure that you're segmenting your CRO tests in the same way you're segmenting media tests, to make sure that you're respecting your audience and their needs, and you're getting the most performance you can get out of each of your clicks.
You don't put speed bumps on a runway, as they say. It, you know, when someone's ready to take off, you don't want to put roadblocks in front of them. And I think that's all about meeting the customer where they're at.
Exactly. And there is a lot of it is very intuitive. When we break it down and put your marketer hat on, not your media buyer hat, which just wants to optimize numbers and pull levers. You have to put your objective marketer hat on. Think about your product. Think about what does this subset of users I'm targeting actually need. CRO isn't magic. There's no secret sauce. There's no click this one button and you're going to get a 40% boost in conversion rate. It's just doing common sense things that we all know as marketers make sense. The fixing above the fold, the catering the proper user experience to your audience. Like, this stuff is pretty straightforward. It's the implementing it and building a strategy around it that makes sense. And that's
continually
really the
testing it, remembering to continually testing it. Like when you have something winning, just exactly. Not forgetting to like look up in 6 months later and be like, oh yeah, I guess we should continually test some things.
And being forward looking with it too. It's so easy to find. We all have that experience. You're in a media campaign. You find an audience that hits. You're scaling it. You're winning. Everybody's happy. It's so easy to forget about the CRO, especially when it's on the uptick. If you unlock this new audience and it's working and it's crushing it, that is the perfect time to figure out within that new audience that you've just unlocked, how do we cater to them even better? How do we upsell them more? How do we build bundles? And how do we build above the fold user experiences for this specific subset of users to milk that user even further and find more of that found money?
Above the fold. That's really where you need to, people just have to understand what's happening right away and where possible and where accurate be called out specifically for their avatar, their use case. They got to be grabbed in that above the fold section.
Yeah. Above the fold is always going to be absolutely paramount to any CRO experience, whether that's your landing page, whether that's your PDP or your collection page. And again, that's not something you could necessarily look at in a binary way. One thing that we're seeing a really big uptick in that's not on a lot of people's radar is tablet traffic, especially in the older demographics. We're seeing upwards of 15% of tablet traffic coming through. And those people we find convert very, very well if you have a proper catered experience. Just think about it. You're thinking about mom who has her tablet sitting on the couch after dinner, just shopping around, like the absolute golden audience. But the problem is a lot of off-the-shelf page builders kind of ignore the tablet experience because you have your desktop experience that's really wide, you have your mobile experience that's really small, and the tablet experience is kind of somewhere in the middle. And most off-the-shelf experiences, that tablet UX is just going to be awful. So doing things like that and making sure you're above the fold isn't just optimized to mobile and desktop and looks pretty good, but breaking it down and using a tool like Browser Stack, which will let you test your experience across a bunch of different devices and a bunch of different browsers, and making sure that's continuous. Like, for all you know, your experience on iPhone 12s could be totally broken. And if you don't know that, and that's 5% of your traffic, you're punting out 5% of the money that you're spending into the void. And it's little things like that that really can make a big difference, especially at scale.
I remember those early days of mobile advertising and just all of the different device types that we would be optimizing for. And I remember we used to be like excluding certain devices and focusing in on certain devices with all the real-time bidding networks. It's nice to know that everything is, you know, now you just have to look at, you know, mobile, desktop, but tablet, I think, is a really good shout that a lot of people aren't maybe thinking about. I can just see my mom taking a picture with that tablet right now.
Look at your Facebook traffic and compare it to last year. Tablet traffic is on the rise pretty significantly. And when we talk about, that's actually a really good point, when we go back to the dying world of DSP buying and how, as media buyers, we used to look at, like, does this specific iPhone on OS 10.2.2 with a female that's over 30 is our golden age of traffic? When we're media buying in these Advantage Plus campaigns, if your page, sorry, I'm not trying to dummy Advantage Plus, but if your page is broken for that subset of your audience or doesn't perform as well because of a technical issue, Facebook just won't serve it to that audience because they think it's converting poorly and you're not really going to have insight into it. So you need to make sure that you're manually doing that triple checking yourself, that your page experience is good across the board. Because if it's not good, Facebook's going to assume that your audience is just bad and not performing for your product when really it's just a page issue. But all Facebook sees is this person isn't converting, so I'm not going to serve that traffic there. You could be missing out on a very, very large portion of your otherwise great converting audiences because your page isn't optimized properly for their devices and Facebook's just not serving to them because you're letting it bid manually. Or automatically, rather.
So these are all great points about your storefront, your landing pages. What about the Shopify, and specifically about Shopify? What's going on these days with the cart experience and the checkout experience? There's a lot of one-page checkout. Is the experiment still going on between one-page checkout and their current three-step process or two-step process?
Yeah, that closed off a few months ago. But yeah, I mean, we're seeing, based on our data, the one page is pretty clearly winning out for us across the board. The kind of secret sauce that we're leading into and pretty much enforcing across all of our clients. And again, this stuff is common sense, but you'd be surprised at how many brands just don't abide by it, is make sure you have a cart slider, make sure that's fully locked in, and make sure you're dynamically upselling products within that. Make sure you have your one page checkout sorted out and your post-purchase upsells. If you have those three items in place, you're going to be ahead of 50% of the people in the proc right now.
And that's not done. Shopify doesn't have that functionality natively, do they? You're using external apps to do all the upsells and downsells? Cart page optimizations. Yeah,
they have some boilerplate, like some themes have it built in. But you're then going to be restricted by that theme and everything within it. There's quite a few third-party apps. We actually, because of the restriction of third-party apps, we end up building a lot of that stuff ourselves internally. We actually have a product that we built from the ground up that allows us to code all this stuff up from scratch. One of the other really big pillars that we're seeing for CRO in 2024 is page speeds, specifically in regards to Shopify. So Shopify has been really, really good at offering all of these apps and layers of functionality that we can add on. But one of the things that's starting to happen, and I encourage anybody watching this to check it out in your own store, once you layer on 3, 4, 5 external apps, you're making API calls out to 3, 4, 5 external places and adding all of these contingencies to your website, which makes it really, really slow. Like, we're talking 3, 4, 5 seconds load time. And when we're in a market of digital time being worth more than it's ever been, where your average session time on TikTok is like 15 to 20 seconds of video, 5 seconds of load time is an eternity in that world. So being able to bump that down is one of the biggest levers that you have. And unfortunately, staying within Shopify locally, there's just not many ways to do that. So we're using tech called Headless Commerce. Again, we have a product internally at Pilot House that allows us to do that, to kind of get around all of that, build really fast pages while still working in all the functionality that we need.
And then specifically on that cart page and checkout experience, like, what are we doing? What are we doing that's different than Shopify's native experience that's working better?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that we're seeing right now is on the cart pages and the cart slider. A few different levers that we have there. One of the biggest ones is we built a plugin very similar to Rebuy, for anybody familiar with that. That's effectively allowing us to dynamically insert upsell content in the cart, as well as cater specific deals and specific discounts to users based on pretty much any variables we want, whether that's a specific audience they clicked on. One of the really big levers we're seeing is frequency of page visits. So people who have been to the website 3, 4, 5 times, if they've added to cart those multiple times, we can trigger more aggressive discounts based off that to retain them as a customer. Also, some really aggressive split testing tools within the cart on bundling, as well as subscriptions, and trying to find the sweet spot within that. That's another huge lever you have is your bundles and how you're presenting those, how you're discounting them, whether you're doing a buy three, get one, whether you're doing a flat discount. Same with subscriptions, whether you're trying to bait the subscription with a free product up front, 1 month free. All of those different levers, split testing those within the cart on the upsells, whether that's just a static split test or based on a dynamic variable, has been a huge win that we're seeing. That, again, there's apps that you kind of hodgepodge together within Shopify to make that happen, but you have like 6 different apps and you're trying to connect them all. We've managed to bring that down into just one concise test. Being able to roll those things out, report on the lift, see it very clearly, adjust it on a dynamic audience basis has been a big win for us.
And just cart slider, that's basically like gamification of the cart in a way, right? That's just a visual anchor to tell you where you are in the cart process. Or what is a cart slider exactly?
Cart slider is just, I mean, it's pretty static. Cart slider is where you add a product to cart, instead of going to your out to an external page, it pops up off to the side.
Got it.
On the page. Yeah.
Got
instead
it.
Of basically reducing as much friction as possible. If the user's stepping off to a separate page, you're adding another piece of friction to the user experience. Ability for drop-off could be disrupting their flow. Again, that the cart slider itself is becoming more and more common. Some people still don't use it. If you don't, please do. But we managed to gain quite a bit of flexibility within that slider and are seeing some pretty significant lift.
Very cool. And you mentioned, I don't know, we've talked about Warp Drive a lot here. Where are we at with Warp Drive right now? I know Warp Drive is part of, I think, you know, a lot of when you're a client at Pilot House, you can get access to Warp Drive and what we're doing, access to our team. How are we positioning it? Is it something where it's not ready to be positioned externally yet, right?
Yeah, so we are starting to service external clients. For context, for those who are listening and might not know what it is, that's that headless commerce product I talked about. It's pretty much a full stack CRO optimization platform that not only allows you to optimize and split test your traffic to different pages to find what's best for certain audiences and have a robust reporting, but we also actually build the entire store in our environment. So we could cater all of the split tests, cater the user experiences to the customer. Initially it was built just as a tool to give us more control and add more value to our clients within the agency. But we're seeing such significant benefits from that, that we've kind of expedited facing it externally. We don't necessarily have a open season product offering for anybody outside yet, but if actively optimizing your page, making it more performant in a much more hands-off way than you're probably used to is something that's appealing, we are willing to have those conversations and work with people that may be a good fit to experience that lift. So definitely reach out if that's in the wheelhouse.
And talk to me about, because it's definitely being involved in conversations around headless. There are pros and cons to it. There are people that say it becomes too involved or too much to manage. How do we position what we've built in a way that sort of assuages those fears, or is it a challenge?
It is a challenge. It is our biggest challenge, but we've kind of solved that on a two-pillar solution. So one of the biggest things that we're able to do is run our headless store and all of our CRO tests in a total vacuum from anything that the client or brand may be doing. What that means is we're totally non-disruptive to any current SOPs or processes. As anybody knows who's made a big tech change before, it pretty much sets your business back quite a few months in training the team and glitches that come up and problems and blah, blah, blah. We know that that's the case and will be inevitably. So instead of rebuilding your entire Shopify store and changing a bunch of stuff and asking you to train your team and change your SOPs, your Shopify store stays the same. we build an entirely new version of your store on a separate subdomain that can be seamlessly test alongside your existing Shopify store. And then the second pillar that we solve it on is we could incrementally roll it out onto your main store once we see the results and once you've gained the confidence in it, that it's going to be something that makes a difference for your brand to move forward with. That means that that big day of reckoning where you normally switch tech and everything breaks doesn't really exist because we're able to slowly roll it out in the places that matter until and train up your team over time until we get to that point where you're fully rolled out. You're seeing the benefits, you're seeing the lift without that big upfront shift in resources that normally has to happen.
Nice. So if people out there are thinking this sounds like something they'd want to talk with you about, just reach out, Brett at pilothouse.co.
That's me.
I really love to talk.
I'm a big chitty chatter.
Big chitty chatter. I think we'll have to do a podcast. We'll have to do a CRO podcast that's more just about like, because you optimize everything as an individual. Like I know you day trade, you optimize your finances there. I know you're an influencer and you're optimizing your videos and your approach there. I feel like you're a big time like optimizer in general. And I think we should do a podcast on just like Brett optimization engine.
I will. That will be a very long podcast if you give me the floor for it. Because my kind of overall tendency is just making things as efficient as possible. The funny thing, again, it goes back to CRO. All of this stuff, everybody knows what they should be doing. It's not like there's any secret sauce. There's no magic. There's no click one button and get a lift. It's just implementing all of the things that you know you should be doing and know you have to and building a process and a plan and giving you a vehicle to do it. That's all this stuff is. I know if I go ask any brand owner what they need to do to make a difference on the side of the CRO, we could sit down for an hour and they'll tell me all the things that I would tell them they need to do. They just don't know how to do it, right? It's like, oh, I need to hire a team. Oh, I need to hire a blah, blah, agency, blah, blah. It's not worth it. It's going to be technically complex. It's just building a platform to do those on. And that's kind of where we stand on it.
I love to hear. What's the best optimization you've made to your life in your personal life? What would you say is the most impactful optimization you've made in your home?
Ooh, again, this is going to, I don't want to sound like performance guru-y or anything, but honestly, man, it's consistent sleep schedule. I know that sounds like so boring. Again, it's boring and everybody knows that it's something you have to do, but like it just brings such it gives you a baseline waking up the right time to kind of to schedule out the rest of things. It gives you consistency. It's just, again, super boring. Everybody knows you're supposed to do it. Nobody really does it or builds a plan to it. But once you lock that in, it opens up a realm for so many other things. It's no different. Again, no different than CRO testing. You fix your above the fold. Everybody knows you're supposed to do that, but nobody really does it. You fix your sleep. Things get better. It's all the same.
I love it. That's more. I was hoping you were going to say when you put both feet on your ground after you wake up, your coffee machine starts and like a Rube Goldberg experiment, you get toast goes in. And that's how I envision Brett's life. It's like clockwork.
It's a very close number two.
This has been great. We'll stay in touch about CRO, and otherwise, I'll just see you on the dance floor tonight, buddy.
Hell yeah. Catch you there, dude.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you're not getting the D2C newsletter, you can subscribe for free at directtoconsumer.co. And if you want to learn more about Pilot House's all-killer, no-filler services, take off to pilothouse.co.
I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.